Homage to the blessed, noble, and perfectly enlightened one. Homage to the blessed, noble, and perfectly enlightened one. Homage to the blessed, noble, and perfectly enlightened one. So in the Thai language, one of the epithets of the Buddha is one who is far from the kilesas, far from the defilements. So how is that good, or in what way is that good? So we see that all the defilements, they're the cause for suffering, for dukkha to arise in the mind. Even for ourselves who have everything we need in life, we're not lacking for anything, but these defilements, this quality of ignorance, delusion, darkness, is a cause for craving or tanha to arise, this wanting to arise in the mind. And it's craving of all different types. There's the kama, tanha, the craving for sensuality, wanting the objects of the sight, sound, taste, smell, touch, and the bhava, tanha, craving for becoming, so wanting more, having this liking already, but then it doesn't stop. There's wanting for more and more of that. That's the bhava, tanha. And then there's the vibhava, tanha, not wanting to become. There's a sense object that one dislikes, the mood of disliking. We don't want that, we don't want to be that. So we see that all these factors are causes for one another. Ignorance being a cause for craving, and craving leading to birth and becoming. Say avijja, ignorance leading to feeling tone, leading to craving. And so these are all causes together, leading to birth and becoming, leading to dukkha and suffering in the present moment. So we have to come and train the mind, teach the mind to be intelligent. Because we see that the original mind is bright and luminous and clear, but it's not yet intelligent, it lacks wisdom. So we see its nature is bright and clear, but it's not yet smart or not yet intelligent. Because these sense objects contact the mind, and then delusion proliferates based on that all the time. And therefore the mind has this quality of sadness, or the unhappy mind continuously arising like that, and more sense objects come into contact with the mind that lacks mindfulness and wisdom, delusion keeps arising more and more, and sadness, unhappiness keeps arising more and more. So therefore we come to practice the Dhamma, to undertake the 5 precepts or the 8 precepts. So we have care, restraint with regard to our actions of body, speech, and mind, to be peaceful. For instance, today, the Wan Pra, Lunar Observance Day, this is the large Lunar Observance Day where the monks listen to the Padimokkha, the monastic discipline, and the laity come to give alms, to make merit together. So when having time, having a day off, people have the faith to come from far away or to gather together online to practice, to train our minds, to give rise to peace and collectedness, to give rise to wisdom. We have this wisdom studying and learning, and that allows us to have the wisdom to work, to do various jobs in the world. So we see that everything uses wisdom, requires some wisdom. like raising children, for instance, uses wisdom. But another type of wisdom is the wisdom that the Buddha taught, a wisdom of the jitta, the mind, to study nature, to learn about nature, that which we are constantly encountering all the time, and that which we take as self, as me and mine. We learn and to understand that it's not self, not me and mine. And knowing that it's not self, we can still live in the world. It's merely changing one's view. It's not that understanding not self means that one must ordain. That's not the case. So one with full parami, becoming a fully self-awakened Buddha, is far from the defilements. And when the brain and khandhas pass away, then it's parinibbana, or the final nibbana. And for the lady, change their view from wrong view to right view, it's just that much. One still has everything that one had before, like having a wife or a husband, children, relatives, a job, just like before. We see, for instance, Anattapindika, Lady Visakha, these great male and female lay disciples. They didn't need to ordain. They lived in the world with mindfulness and wisdom, but they lived in the world with less suffering. If before we say that the suffering is at 100%, and we say that there is 75% left at that point, so there's less, and the suffering doesn't last as long. There's still anger. Anger arises, but it doesn't last long. There's wisdom there. And the anger is under control as well. One sees the drawbacks of anger, sees that it's not good, and it sees that we see that it's a heat in the mind. It's a fire in our mind. This anger, it's a fire in one's own mind and heart. We see that it's not, when the mind has anger, the mind is not at ease, and it burns the body up as well, so that the body's not at ease. So we learn about this. We learn that anger is not good, and therefore we have effort and perseverance to train the mind to become cool and at ease like water. It's like we're out in the open when there's a hot wind, hot sun, and we need shade, we need shelter from that heat. So we need to bring our minds to coolness, to shade. So everyone having been born in the beginning, they don't know, they lack knowledge. And so this heat keeps increasing and increasing. When one's unhappy, for instance, there is jealousy, that's a fire in the mind, a lack of loving kindness, a lack of compassion, a lack of sympathetic joy. For instance, others getting something good, then one isn't happy with them, one just feels jealousy. So people that have jealousy, they're born into a low position in society because their mind lacks that sympathetic joy, lacks that joy and happiness. The Buddha taught that one born into a high position in society is one who has a heart of mudita, a heart of sympathetic joy, rejoicing with others a lot. Whenever someone has goodness or does goodness, one feels happiness with them. And whoever has unhappiness or misfortune, we don't make it worse for them. And if they do anything unskillful, we forgive them. We have loving kindness for all beings, wishing them well, wishing them happiness. And if others are suffering, then we help them according to our capacity. So we train and practice in this Brahmavihara of metta, of loving kindness. This is a very good meditation object. It's loving kindness as a meditation object cares and supports the other meditation objects so that they can give rise to peace. It's something that Dhamma practitioners must have in their mind. So we train the mind in this way to restrain and control the actions of body and speech, to have sila and virtue, to control the mind, to train the mind to make it higher. Because we see that these qualities of ignorance, craving, and attachment, they bring the mind to suffering and darkness more and more. So we need to achieve victory over ignorance, craving, and attachment. If we don't do anything, if we just let the mind do what it will according to the strength of the defilements, then the mind will just be unhappy all the time. In a given day, the unhappiness of mind just increases and increases. So one with wisdom sees the drawbacks of this unhappy mind and seeks a way out, according to various methods. And one with spiritual virtues, one with parami, meets the way of sila, samadhi, panya, virtue, collectedness, and wisdom. And so we see that all of us, from the king down to all the supporters, everyone is supporting the Buddha sasana, the Buddha's dispensation, to last long. And the king in Thailand supporting it to last long, all the laity supporting it to last long. So this is the faith of the laity to help and support, seeing the drawbacks of the agitated mind and seeking a way to train the mind to practice. One perhaps starts with studying the texts and going to the monastery. For instance, myself, I lived very close to a monastery, quite close. There was a forest monastery, a branch of Wat Nong Papong, that was very close to my childhood home, about 1.5 kilometers away. And I didn't go there, but I could see the monks walking on alms round, wearing their jackfruit-colored robes, or dyed with jackfruit wood. And they were restrained and composed, quite faith-inspiring. And one could say that, yes, this was good, and I would raise my hands in anjali and rejoice with them. And I was just a child, but when I would see monks, whether from a village monastery or a forest monastery, I would raise my hands in anjali out of respect. I didn't know why I was doing this. It's just my temperament, my character to do that. I opened a book and I saw that there is a image of a Buddha statue, the Buddha Jinarat. Then I raised my hands in anjali before I turned the next page. My friends asked me why I was doing this. I answered that I didn't know. But if I didn't raise my hands in anjali, my mind would feel hot and agitated. I'd feel ill at ease. So we see that this was my conditioning, my character, to have this respect arise. So it's like this. It's good, but it was just raising the hands in anjali. It was not yet practicing, following the teachings of the Buddha. And we see that Buddhists are mostly like that. They have this respect, but the teachings of the Buddha, they don't want to follow them. They don't like to follow them. They like to follow the defilements. But we see that the Lord Buddha destroyed the defilements already. He's far from the defilements in his mind. He's far from them. So what do we do? In the beginning, we start with the noble truth of suffering, of dukkha. If we don't have suffering, then we don't seek out the Dhamma. But having suffering, then one seeks out the Dhamma. One sees that having been born, one is lost or deluded according to the strength of ignorance, craving, and attachment. So this suffering arises, and one seeks escape from that. One seeks a way out. And one with spiritual virtues will seek out the best way, which is the way of virtue, collectedness, and wisdom, sila, samadhi, panya. So we see that this is something simple and basic. It's easy. But we practice it. We try to put it into practice. We feel that it's not easy. For instance, with regard to virtue, when anger arises, are we able to control our actions of body and speech? Are we able to not let out a harsh or coarse speech? If we can do this, then the quality of coolness and peace will arise. We see that some people living the household life, living in the house, there's anger, criticism, harsh speech. It's not peaceful. It's not cool. It's a difficult place to grow up in a family where the speech is not good or it's harsh. There's a lack of virtue. That's a house that's on fire, a house that's hot. So we need to train and practice, to train the mind at home with the wife, with the husband, with the family. And the husband and wife can practice meditation together to bring about coolness and happiness. This is a blessing in one's life. This is a foundation of coolness of body and speech. To have control and restraint in actions of body and speech in the family. And we train and practice in samadhi, peace and collectedness. Then if we have time on, for instance, Saturday or Sunday, we can go to the monastery to practice, to give alms, to bow to the monks and shrine, to listen to the Dhamma, to sit meditation, to train the mind in peace. So this is a very good opportunity. We see that nowadays we have the ability to communicate, have this technology where we can do these online sessions, online retreats, or on-site as well. So may you have effort and perseverance in this, because we see that the days and nights are constantly passing by. So what are we doing with our time? This is what the Buddha taught. It's going from dark to light, dark to light, dark to light. And we can easily be lost for a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. It goes by quickly. We see that these lives of ours are not long. We see that time consumes all beings, consumes itself as well. We see that all beings meet with old age, sickness, and death. Everyone will have aging, various illnesses, and death. Having this illness or that illness, even if someone has everything they could wish for, they have every kind of wealth in the world, perhaps just 30 or 40 years old, they get an illness come up, a sickness. There was one elder monk answering the question of a king about why he came to ordain, even though he had everything, he had his youth and wealth and so on. And he answered that the world has no master, has no one in charge. Old age, sickness, and death are the master, are in charge. In the world, it's necessary to part with everything, to give up everything, that nothing lasts. And the world is never full, never satisfied. We see that the minds of beings with ignorance, craving, and attachment, then things are never enough. It's never sufficient. And that's its nature. Nature is like this. I was listening to the Dhamma of Venerable Ajahn Chah talking about tanha, craving, this wanting that we understand already. And Venerable Ajahn Chah was saying that it's like, this craving is like a large vessel that's always open. We can put in many different things into that vessel and it's never full. It's like a black hole. Everything that enters it gets consumed, is gone, not perceived anymore. So it eats everything. So ignorance, craving, and attachment are able to do this. We try to get enough, we try to make things enough, but it's never enough. So we come to sit meditation to train the mind in peace, to bring it to coolness and collectedness, so that the mind is settled. We see that all kinds of communication, they just give the mind agitation. If we read a lot or listen to a lot, consume a lot of this, or we know a lot, just makes the mind troubled and agitated. So we look at nowadays in the world, we're able to know everything happening in the world. And if we knew everything happening in the world, then just how agitated would our minds be? So we have to have a lot of restraint to be able to bring the mind to peace and samadhi, to understand nature, to understand impermanence, stress, and not self. But if we receive a lot of sense impressions, then the mind will be not peaceful, just be troubled and agitated. Because we're not free, we want freedom, but we end up seeking out trouble and agitation. So it's important that we need to train, because we all want coolness and peace. And sometimes we don't know ourselves. There is ignorance, avijja, in the mind. But we want coolness of mind, we want peace. But we feel that we want to make our own choices in life. We want to choose for ourselves. Like Dhamma practitioners, sometimes they want to make their own choices. They want to go where they wish, choose for themselves. Like monastics choosing where to spend the rains retreat, sometimes they want to choose for themselves. Living with Venerable Ajahn Chah, the monks would never choose for themselves. They wouldn't try to get what they want. Whatever branch monastery they'd get sent to, that was just up to Venerable Ajahn Chah. At first, I didn't understand this. I thought, well, why is it like this? The kilesas, defilements, were proliferating in my mind. But at that point, I didn't know the kilesas. I thought that one should be able to choose for oneself. But the great master was teaching not to be attached, not to cling to one's own moods and wishes, not to follow the wishes of one's own heart, but to watch over the mind, not to follow after one's moods and thoughts. Because following after one's moods and thoughts gives rise to agitation and trouble. So we see that we can't believe our own thoughts and views. We have to be careful about this. To be able to bring the mind to samadhi and collectedness to give rise to wisdom. In this way, we're able to make the mind cool and at ease. This is Nibbana arising already in the mind, Nibbana arising a little bit at a time. This is wrong view being dispelled to a degree, and right view arising a little bit at a time. And it happens in such a way that we don't even know that it's happening, but this faith arises a little bit at a time. The faith becomes more and more firm. In the end, the faith is firmly established in the Buddha's dispensation. And why is that? It's because we see the truth. At this point, no one is able to deceive us because we've seen for ourselves in our own hearts. The mind feels full, at ease, as rapture and happiness, these qualities that are nama dhammas, immaterial dhammas, that are meritorious and wholesome. This merit, it's a fullness of heart, and this intelligence is merit as well. And so we have intelligence in the doing of goodness, in the cultivation of collectedness, the cultivation of wisdom. And so in terms of wisdom, we listen daily, we think and contemplate, we practice to give rise to the highest wisdom in the heart. We practice to the point where we're able to let go of the moods and mind objects, to let go of the sense objects that give heaviness to the mind. Because we see these qualities of greed, aversion, and delusion, they're hot, they're agitating. So we let go of them bit by bit, a little bit at a time with wisdom, such that we become far from the kilesas bit by bit. Just like we see the Buddha is far from the kilesas already, the arahants are far from the kilesas already. The stream enterer, the sotapanna, is far from the kilesas to a degree. And we want the same. We want the highest, which is nibbana. So firstly, we need to see the Dhamma, to change our views first. So we investigate, or where is the self to be found? So we investigate and we look. The mind says that this is self or that is self, but actually it's delusion saying that it's self. It's not wisdom saying that it's self. So what do we then do? We cultivate samadhi, collectedness. We have effort and perseverance in the cultivation of samadhi, to be able to bring the mind to be firmly established, to be able to know gradually a bit at a time. Because we see that we can't use our thinking to destroy the defilements. I've tried it before myself. Using thinking to attain cannot be done. It's not clear, the mind's too constrained or tight. So we need to bring the mind to samadhi, to peace and collectedness. And then at that point one sees that, oh, it's like this. The doubts dissipate. Before there was a great deal of doubt, a lot of agitation in the mind every day. So we see that it's easy. Have a lot of mindfulness. Do bhuto a lot. Contemplate the body a lot, just this much, it's like this, so that the mind's not troubled and agitated, but also practice in such a way that it's not too tight or stressed. Sometimes we think about things that are stressful and suffering, things from the past. So we have to contemplate to give rise to wisdom. So we see that these troubles that we encounter, it's not just in this one lifetime, but it's these troubles we've been encountering for a great many lifetimes already, beyond counting. And we can't, through wishing, get it to be otherwise. Our wishes won't make it otherwise. We have to accept the truth that it's like this. This is the way it is. There's some karma that's been made in the past, some old karma, and that's the cause that gives rise to result in the present. So we see that some people die young, some people die old. So this is according to karma. And these are troubles or situations we've encountered over countless lives already, not just the present life. And so therefore we make effort to make new karma in the present, to be born anew in Buddha, in our own hearts and minds, to give rise to wisdom, to give rise to knowing bit by bit. And in the end, the mind can change from wrong view to right view, seeing materiality, mentality as not self, not mere mind. But we use the materiality and mentality to cultivate goodness and merit. And then one day we see that these khandhas must pass away according to their time. All this must pass away in its own time. We see that the noble ones, the Arya Pugalas, they must die as well. But they die with a mind that knows, a mind that's not lost. So we, for ourselves, we train that we must die with knowing. That we Buddhists, whether we're close by or far away, we practice and train in the Dhamma. We set our hearts on this. So may you all apply your minds. May you succeed according to your wholesome aspirations in all things, in work, in meditation. May all of you grow in Dhamma and grow in blessings.